This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Last month, the New York Times published a piece entitled Equality in Marriages Grows and So Does Class Divide. It reveals whom we choose to marry generally has changed over the decades, and now more often it's a marriage of equals rather than a breadwinner marrying a homemaker. The article cites a study, Marriage and Divorce, Changes and Their Driving Forces. Betsy Stevenson is a co-author of that paper and an economist at the University of Michigan. So let's start with some basics. How, among opposite-sex couples, has choosing a partner for marriage changed over the 20th and early 21st centuries?
Well, it used to be that the old adage was opposites attracted. And the reason why people would say opposites attract is because you wanted to marry somebody who was going to be a complement to your set of skills. So if you're really good in the labor market, you're going to be able to bring home a good income. You want someone who's going to be able to run the household while you're at work. That's sort of the classic family that we all, you know, remember from the 50s, is you found people who were marrying who did separate things and they specialized in their separate activities. What's happened is technological change combined with growth in the market economy and combined with new opportunities for women have all meant that that type of marriage isn't the marriage that's thriving anymore. What type of marriage that's thriving are marriages where people have similar skills and they're not trying to bring separate things to the table, but in fact, the benefit they're getting from marriage is from being similar to each other, and that type of watching the same TV shows, liking the same movies, having similar ideas about how to raise children together jointly. It's a very different type of marriage than a world in which, you know, moms did something very different than dads.
Well, let's talk about some of the economic impacts of that. I mean, the results end up something like this. The wealthier, better educated people choose each other. Less wealthy, less educated people choose each other. The wealthier couple ends up moving to a neighborhood where there are other wealthy couples like them. The less wealthy couple can't afford to live in those kinds of places, so they end up living among people who are more like them. We end up with this kind of organic class segregation. How has that changed America? And does that really hold up as a rule?
One of the most compelling facts that helps you understand what's happening is the fact that college-educated women used to be the least likely women to get married. And the reason was they had a lot of skills that they could use outside of the home, they could use in the marketplace, but the traditional marriage where they were supposed to specialize in the home wasn't as appealing to them. So you saw very low marriage rates for college-educated women, extremely low marriage rates for women with graduate degrees. And today, those are exactly the women who are the most likely to get married.
Do we know why?
It's because marriage has changed in a way that means that it's now appealing for college-educated women, because when they marry, they're not committing to being a specialist homemaker, providing, making clothes, making meals from scratch, running the household, but they're instead coming together as equals with someone where they're both going to contribute by earning money that they can use to buy the types of things that women used to make. You know, my mom used to make clothes. We don't make clothes anymore because there's such a thick market and there's an opportunity for us to buy clothes at much lower prices than we used to be able to buy them at. And as a result, and we have much better opportunities of things to do with our time. So we don't want a great seamstress at home who's concentrating in making the clothes, cooking meals from scratch. Instead, women can come into marriages and contribute through earning a market income and being equal. And that's made marriage very appealing for college-educated women who are looking for companionship, not to have specialized roles.
So we get to that point where you've got this double income, both of them making better than average income, and I want to get to that class segregation part of it because that's what we're talking about. You started out saying we used to have a marriage of opposites, but now we're looking more like a marriage of equals, but that does contribute to this class segregation problem.
When we look at household income, you see dual earner households where you have college graduate marries college graduate compared to dual earner households where high school only marries high school only, you're going to see a bigger gap than we used to see. But in some sense, we want to keep in mind that women have always contributed to what their households were able to consume and the quality of life in their households. They used to do it through home production. And we didn't measure the quality and the extent to which they were able to make pies and make dinner and make clothes. So it's you know, that in some sense...
Or the contribution of the economic well-being of the family.
Right. Yeah. So in some sense, now we're measuring it all in dollars. It looks like it's really grown a lot. Some of that is a little bit of a measurement issue, but some of it's real. Because by letting women go into the market, women are able to do the thing that is going to make them most productive. And as a result, you have very, you know, highly skilled women who are going out to the market, who are earning a lot of money, who are marrying men who can earn a lot of money. And you have them, as you said, you know, marrying together, living in neighborhoods with other people who are like them, and parenting in a different way than lower skilled, less educated couples, and forming households in a different way. This is contributing to these differences. But I wouldn't say it's all driven necessarily by the fact that we're seeing these changing marriage patterns.
Although women are doing much better as far as economic equality than they have in the past, there's still this pay inequality between women and men. How does being married affect that pay gap?
What we do see is that women still get very large penalties for taking time out of the labor force. And even time out that I personally don't think of as time out, like a maternity leave is not, in my opinion, a time out. But when we see women taking a 3-month maternity leave, in a lot of careers, they can take a pretty big pay hit for that. So the maternity leave itself may be paid, but then you look at the types of promotions they get in the ensuing years. So we know there's a motherhood penalty in the data. We know that there are penalties from taking time out of the labor force or time out of work. Some of that contributes to the pay gap. We still see sort of a traditional situation where when women are married with kids, they face bigger earnings gaps than when they're not.
Increasingly, women are making more money than their male partners. How has that changed the dynamics of marriage?
Well, there was actually a really interesting study that showed there's a lot of households where income is quite equal, and women avoid situations where they earn just a little bit more than their husbands. It's not worth it to them to get a little bit more when it's going to mean that they earn more than their husband. If they're going to get a lot more, sure, they'll confront the awkwardness in the family. But if it's just a little bit more, they might as well stay on the side of earning a little bit less. So there is still a tension in relationships where when the woman starts to earn more, people feel uncomfortable about it. And so that study that showed that people try to avoid being in that situation pointed out that that's still an issue, that we still need to embrace the idea that it doesn't matter who earns more.
A growing number of couples just opt out of the idea of marriage altogether. From an economic perspective, what's the impact of that decision?
First of all, I would say economists always talk about marriage when they really mean coupledom. You can actually separate these things. You know, what does it mean to be legally married? What does it mean to form a household with someone? If you're thinking about forming a household with a long-term commitment, you know, there are obviously a lot of benefits to doing that. Again, if you're picking somebody who has the same interests as you, you buy one TV and you watch TV together, and it's more fun than if you two are living in separate households, so you're then buying two TVs. So there's shared what economists would call public goods. We typically think of public goods as the playground, but the public good is also your house within the confines of your household. So the more you can share those goods with another person, the more of them you'll get to have. There's real benefits from forming that relationship. And so when couples aren't forming it, they're losing out. But it's also important to know that in today's marriages where the gains aren't coming from specialization, they're coming from sharing those kind of public goods together, then marriage is most beneficial for people who have the time and resources to enjoy those kind of goods. If you are struggling to make ends meet, you might find that a relationship is more trouble than it's worth. And that's, in fact, one of the things we're seeing among lower income households, that women are able to support themselves, so they're able to go out and earn a living. And, you know, they find that their relationship, the gains they get from it, aren't offsetting necessarily the costs. And I think it's important for people to realize that we don't want people to get married so that they can be financially stable, but we actually want to help people achieve financial stability so that they can pursue the benefits of a relationship.
You're getting to the point I wanted to follow up on. And we've been talking chiefly about economic considerations about couples and marriage and divorce, but tell me there's more to that than that, please. I mean, there's happiness too, right?
Exactly. Marriage is really about having a better life because you're sharing that life with someone else. And you want to find the right partner to do that with, a person for whom sort of everything is going to be better because you're doing it with that person. You know, in the past, better meant well, you know, we worked as a team and you did your stuff and I did my stuff and that's why things were better. Today we get the luxury of being able to do things together. It's not, I'm not relying on you to make up for my weaknesses, because I can go out into the market and buy the things that make up for my weaknesses. Instead, the weaknesses I'm looking for you to help me with are more emotional, psychological weaknesses. I'm looking for you to support me, to encourage me, to help keep me happy. That companionship model of marriage that's thriving, but couples need to have the financial stability in their lives to be able to pursue that kind of happiness.
What kind of economic correlations factor into whether a marriage lasts, whether there's a divorce?
People should realize that the divorce rate peaked in the 1970s, and it's been coming down. Marriages have become more stable in recent generations. A couple things that are contributing to that. Some of it is that people have a better idea of what their life's going to look like. You know, back in the 70s when people got married, they thought, oh, I'm going to be a homemaker, my husband's going to earn a living, and then things changed and the woman got a job and the husband was unhappy with it and the wife was unhappy with the husband's unhappiness and the marriage didn't last. Today, I think people have a pretty good sense of what kind of marriage they want. But the other thing is that people are getting married when they're a little bit older because they are looking for that person who's going to be a companion. And they're waiting until they have a little bit more of a sense of themselves so they know what kind of person is actually going to be well suited to them. And we see that these marriages that start at older ages are much more stable than the ones that start, say, in your early 20s.
Betsy Stevenson is an economist at the University of Michigan and a co-author of the paper Marriage and Divorce, Changes and Their Driving Forces. Thanks for coming in.
It's my pleasure. Great talking with you today.